This show is part of the Out of This World Entertainment on the Sci-Fi Podcast Network, TSFPN.com.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast for TheForce.net. My name's Eric, and I'm your host, bringing you the latest news and commentary from the Star Wars community. Well, here we are at the end of our review series with Return of the Jedi. Now, for those of you who think my complaints about how there was nothing going on in Phantom Menace indicates I only care about action scenes, you'll be happy to know that I enjoyed the beginning of Return of the Jedi despite the lack of action right up until the end of the first act. Of course, we're right back on Tatooine, my least favorite planet in the Star Wars universe, but that's not a big deal. The concept and execution of Jabba's Palace was really good. It was a better showcase of aliens than the Cantina was, and the improvements over the costumes of Episode 4 were massive. The aliens here seemed more alive and less like props or afterthoughts. And if you know anything about the production of A New Hope, this isn't that surprising. This time around, they had a better budget and developed the first act of the film around this environment. Let's get the bad news out of the way first. Looking back upon the entire series, including Jar Jar, including the young Anakin, even including the Tarzan yell that Chewie does later in this movie, the one moment in the series that violently yanked me away from the fiction of the story happens in Jabba's Palace. I'm sure most of you can guess the scene I'm talking about. In the original version, the musical number was annoying. It sounded like an early 80s pop song gone wrong. Sure, I'll give him a little bit of credit. If it's hard to design a language that doesn't sound like an existing language, I have no doubt that it's infinitely harder to try to design a style of music that doesn't sound like an existing style. Still, this number was annoying. It was fairly short, though, and it served a purpose, namely setting Ula up to be fed to the Rancor. But then we get to the special edition. The musical number went from merely annoying to downright painful. We've now got a mainstream music video going on in a Star Wars movie, and there's nothing that sounds alien or exotic about this number. I don't know whether this is supposed to be jazzy pop or poppy jazz, but either way, it doesn't work. I mean, when it comes to individual elements in a movie, I'm fairly tolerant. I can easily put up with Jar Jar, even without some Jedi meditation procedure in advance. But this, I mean, it's not just for the Star Wars movies either. I'm hard-pressed to come up with any movie that has a scene that rips me out of its universe this violently. And this time around, it's even longer and more prominent. Fortunately, aside from this problem, the first act of Return of the Jedi is pretty solid. Han's still frozen and in Jabba's custody. And then, in what seems like a really stupid move, Luke gives Jabba the two droids. Leia tries to sneak in and free Han, but then she and Chewie both get captured. Lando's undercover, but not like it looks like that's going to do a lot of good. Everything relies upon Luke coming in and saving the day. And we just saw Luke get his butt handed to him by Vader, so we know that's not likely. Nevertheless, Luke shows up, walking right in like he owns the place, even kills a Rancor, but then Luke's captured too. And they're all going to get fed to the Sarlacc. So once again, just like throughout much of the classic trilogy, our heroes are pretty bad off. And that's one of the things that really makes the classic trilogy so great. But I'll come back to that point later on. When all hell breaks loose on the sail barge, we get our first indication that Luke may really be a Jedi Knight now. If not, he's pretty close. And for those of you who keep saying that Jabba's thugs are just really bad shots, that's not true. Those guns were probably really heavy and hard to aim, and it was really windy, and the sun was in their eyes. Sorta. Okay, so they were really bad shots. Still, it was a fun scene. Then, for those of us who initially watched the classic trilogy first, we got a first glimpse of the Emperor. After watching Vader wander the galaxy kicking butt for an entire movie, when he's now submitting himself to this old wrinkly guy, we know that this guy must be the epitome of all evil. Then we switch to the epitome of all goodness, Yoda. He explains to Luke that after confronting Vader, Luke will finally be... A Jedi Luke will finally be. We get the last bit of important exposition in the series. We now have confirmation that Vader really is Luke's father, and then Obi-Wan explains that Leia is Luke's sister. The backstory is now complete. Now we enter the endgame. We've got the most epic scenario of the entire series going on now. We've got a ground army infiltrating the bunker to drop the defense shields around the second Death Star. We've got a fleet in space moving in to destroy this new space station. And we've got the final battle of Sith versus Jedi, of father versus son. And what's even worse, the whole thing is yet another trap. But I'm jumping ahead a little bit. The second act is structurally weak here. The first half of the second act is the exposition that takes place on Dagobah, and the second half is the preparation that takes place aboard Home One and on Endor. Oh, and speaking of Endor, it's time for a little dose of truth here. Admit it. If you were a kid when Return of the Jedi came out, you thought Ewoks were cool. Come on, just admit it. There's no shame in it. You were a kid. Sure, now the concept of an entire legion of the Emperor's best troops being wiped out by a bunch of teddy bears seems a little far-fetched. Of course, so is the idea that a crime lord as powerful as Jabba the Hutt would employ a bunch of thugs whose aim is as bad as Greedo's. Still, Luke wiped out Jabba's thugs, and the natives wiped out the invading Imperials. It's not the end of the world. But for those of you who really hate the Ewoks, you'll be glad to know that the debris from both the Executor and the Death Star raining down upon the moon probably wiped out almost every last Ewok in the known galaxy. Speaking of the Executor, some of you pronounce it Executor. I hate to tell you this, but it's Executor. There's no such thing as an Executor. That would be an Executioner. Someone who is an Executor is the one who carries out the will of another person, such as Vader carrying out the will of the Emperor. Hope that clears up any confusion there. Now, where were we? Ewoks, Endor. Okay, so aside from the cutesiness of the Ewoks, the scenes on Endor were pretty cool. I mean, the speeder bikes gave Lucas a chance to satiate his speed fix in a way that forwarded the story this time. And really, most of the humor, once again carried out by either 3PO or Han, worked out really well. I can't say enough good things about the end of this movie. The battle on Endor was fun, the battle in space was impressive, despite the fact that it didn't have the up-close and personal feel of the Battle of Yavin. But most importantly, the battle between Luke, Vader, and the Emperor was exactly what it needed to be, and exactly what it should be. It was the perfect way to tie up the story of the Jedi, and therefore, the entire Star Wars series. And what's really amazing is that whether Star Wars is to you the story of Anakin Skywalker or Luke Skywalker, this movie brings each story to an equally satisfying close. Well, this seems like the perfect time to compare and contrast the two trilogies. And if we're going to do this, it's important to first accurately describe the trilogies and where they fit into the story. The easiest thing to contrast about the trilogies is the difference in settings. In the prequel trilogy, we've got a thriving universe that's very multicultural. Perhaps it's thriving too much, because the galactic government has become so large that a bureaucracy has slowed progress to a crawl. And of course, the Jedi are in their prime. In the classic trilogy, the Empire rules the galaxy, non-human aliens are subdued, the Jedi have been wiped out, and bureaucracy has been replaced by a military state. In the prequel trilogy, our heroes are two Jedi, a master and an apprentice, and a queen-turned-senator, all three of whom are in positions of power in the galaxy. In the classic trilogy, our heroes are a farm boy, two smugglers, and a fugitive princess, all of whom are on the run from the Empire. The theme of the prequel trilogy was the fall of a hero. The theme of the classic trilogy was the rise of a hero. And no, the redemption of Anakin at the end of Return of the Jedi doesn't count because it's not a theme running through the trilogy. So, though the trilogies both share the same series name of Star Wars, even on the surface, they're very different. Of course, the differences go much deeper than this, and the more scholarly fans certainly focus on those deeper issues, but it's also critically important to understand these shallow surface differences. See, without really thinking about it, everybody expected the prequel trilogy to be just like the classic trilogy and to have the same feel. But you've got to understand that they're very, very different stories. And for those classic purists who don't like the prequel trilogy, I propose that once you learn to accept that the very core of these two stories are very different, you'll probably find a new appreciation for the prequels. Don't try to compare the two trilogies. Look at them as two entirely different types of stories rather than one really long story. Now, I probably sound like a hypocrite. I'm sitting here saying not to compare the two trilogies, yet that's exactly what I'm doing. But my point in doing so is to demonstrate how very different they are, and therefore suggest that they be looked at as two stories. Yet because they're both Star Wars stories, there are certainly similarities that can be pointed out. So let's delve a little deeper here. This is my review, so obviously I've got a bias here. And personally, I found the classic trilogy more enjoyable. Like I just got done saying, it's a different type of story than the prequels, so I'm not trying to say that one is better than the other. I'm just saying that I enjoyed the classic trilogy more. And of course, it's easy for me to say that because I grew up with them. But I've got some very specific points as to why I found the original movies more fun. 3 points, actually. First, as I've talked about in the last few reviews, the classic trilogy is all about the underdog. You've got a small band of rebels fighting back against a galactic empire, and they're up against impossible odds. What's worse, a handful of these rebels are being personally hunted down by the most ruthless killer in the galaxy, the very same Dark Lord of the Sith who hunted down and eradicated the last of the Jedi. This means that even in the downtime, there's a possibility of them being discovered or captured. In A New Hope, Luke is evading Imperials on Tatooine. Then he breaks into a space station to rescue a princess from right under their noses. Then he flies with other starfighters against that same space station trying to exploit a long shot of a weakness. In Empire Strikes Back, the Empire finds their hidden base. Han continues to narrowly avoid capture, and then eventually is captured, frozen in carbonite, and turned over to a bounty hunter, while Luke is lured into a trap by Vader, learns Vader is his father, and loses his hand. Even all the way through to the end of Return of the Jedi, the rebels are up against impossible odds. They've got to shut down a shield generator, then somehow destroy a larger Death Star this time, and what they don't realize is that they're being led into a trap. And Luke not only has to confront Vader, but also the Emperor himself. But like I said, even in the downtime, they're in danger, whether it be on the Falcon, on Hoth, Cloud City, or Endor. You know it's just a matter of time before they're knee-deep in the thick of things again. With the prequels, Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan only ever really seem to be in danger when they confront Darth Maul. For the most part, the battle droids came across as laughable. Phantom Menace just really doesn't have any strong sense of danger to it. In Attack of the Clones, things pick up a little bit. There are 2 assassination attempts, but then everything's nice and calm between confrontations. And sure, the fight between Obi-Wan and Jango Fett is intense, and the asteroid chase even more so. And obviously our heroes are in danger during the arena battle, but the rest of the time, there's just no danger. It never really seems like Padme is in any danger until the end of the movie. Even in the opening scene with the explosion on the landing deck, you don't know it's coming ahead of time, and then once it happens, it's done. The other scenes on Coruscant, the scenes with Obi-Wan on Kamino, and all the scenes with Anakin and Padme on Naboo are pretty laid back. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm all for having a story, too. But, well, the story just wasn't all that great anyway. Then in Episode 3, we finally get a real sense of danger about a third of the way through the movie, but we already know that the two heroes we really care about, Obi-Wan and Yoda, continue into the next trilogy, and so do both of the villains, Darth Vader and Emperor Palpatine. So, sure, it feels intense, but it also feels a little empty, too. The second thing the classic trilogy has that's missing from the prequel trilogy is something I've mentioned before, and that's peer relationships. In the classic trilogy, you've got Luke, Han, and Leia, and arguably Chewie, and they're all peers, they're all equals. And they all interact with each other with a camaraderie that makes it easy to relate to them and to care about them. In the prequels, nobody ever lets their hair down, everybody's uptight and official all the time. But more importantly, there are no peer relationships. It's all master and apprentice, or queen and advisors, teacher and student. You've got Obi-Wan, who's subordinate to Qui-Gon. And so is Anakin, and arguably Padme. Qui-Gon is subordinate to the Jedi Council, and then later on Anakin is subordinate to Obi-Wan, who's subordinate to Mace and Yoda. Padme and Anakin are arguably starting a peer relationship, but really, as we see in the meeting with the Queen on Naboo, Padme's in charge and Anakin's her assigned bodyguard. And even when they get past that and move into the pseudo-romantic relationship, Padme's dominant over Anakin as part of the courting process. And of course, in Episode 3, not much changes. The only true peer relationship we see isn't even so much between Mace and Yoda, since they don't really have much of a relationship here, but it's between Yoda and Bail Organa. The only true camaraderie we get to see in the prequel trilogy is between Anakin and Obi-Wan, and we really only get a good look at it early in Episode 2 and early in Episode 3. And still, their camaraderie is fairly restrained, since they still seem to operate very much in teacher and student roles. So again, we don't have the same type of friendly relationships between peers that we had in the classic trilogy. Finally, the third thing we had in the classic trilogy that's missing from the prequel trilogy is hope. In the classic trilogy, we start out with a horrible situation, and our heroes slowly accomplish victories here and there, until they manage to wipe out the Empire entirely. No matter how bad things get, they always seem to find a way out. No matter what happens, there's always hope that they'll succeed. But in the prequel trilogy, there's no hope. We know from the opening crawl of Episode 1 that Anakin will turn into Darth Vader, that Palpatine will rise to be Emperor, and that the Republic will become an evil empire, that almost all the Jedi will be killed off, and that Obi-Wan and Yoda will go into hiding. Really, the only thing we don't know until the end of the trilogy is whether Padme will live or die. So, we have the opposite situation here. No matter how good things get, we always know that there's no hope. We know how things end, and they end badly. So it's a very different experience watching the prequels. Sure, there are many things throughout the prequels that we can't predict, such as many situations with the clones, various secondary Jedi, with Maul, Dooku, and Grievous. But no matter what happens and what victories the good guys manage to pull off, we all know what happens in the end. So, what's my position in this review of the two trilogies? I refuse to say one trilogy is better than the other, because they're so different, and because the prequels had the deck stacked against them from the beginning, because you already know what's going to happen. And also, it's that I find the classic trilogy more enjoyable. Now, don't get me wrong, I really did enjoy the prequels, more so than most people I know. But the subtitle for the original Star Wars film really does fit the classic trilogy. It really is about a new hope, and in many ways, it's the ultimate underdog story. And for me, it'll never be about the mythology, or the editing of the action scenes, or the comparisons to Kurosawa films. It'll always be about the fact that it's the ultimate story of triumphing against the odds. Or, to put it quite simply, hope. I hope you've enjoyed today's podcast. I want to encourage you guys to email us anytime you have questions, comments, or feedback. Our email address is podcast@theforce.net. And if you like today's show, you can help us out a lot by voting for us at podcastalley.com. As always, the opinions expressed here belong to myself, and they don't necessarily reflect the opinions of other TFN staff members, nor of Lucasfilm. TheForce.net is not affiliated with Lucasfilm in any way. This podcast is copyright 2005 TheForce.net, and as silly as this sentence sounds, all trademarks are owned by their respective owners. Until next time, take care, and may the Force be with you.